I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. You've done something illegal and you got caught. Is this indiscretion going to follow you around forever? Well, it depends on a lot of things. Today we learn about recent changes to Missouri's expungement law and find out what it means for people convicted of crimes there. We'll also look at what crimes can be expunged and when in Missouri and Kansas. But first, we talk with a small-town mayor who is now commanding a big-time salary. We'll find out what prompted his large pay increase and hear the latest goings-on in and around Edgerton, Kansas. Later, Bill Brownlee has this week's Local Listen. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. This morning, we meet a man who just got himself a spectacular pay raise. The fact that he's a public official, a mayor no less, makes it even more intriguing. And the fact that his salary just went from $1,000 a year to $90,000 has made headlines. But here's the thing. A lot of people in the town of Edgerton think Mayor Donald Roberts is worth every penny, even though his salary now puts him above mayors in the much larger Johnson County cities of Overland Park, Olathe, and Lenexa. Mayor Donald Roberts joins us right now. And Mayor, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
How is the news of your pay raise, your big pay raise, going over in Edgerton?
You know, I've received a lot of support from the citizens of Edgerton, and I'm very grateful for that. But we've also seen a lot of progress in our community, and so we've seen an immense amount of growth that applies back to them directly. So,
you know, there are only 1,700 people in your town. Why does it need a mayor earning $90,000 a year and a city administrator now earning upwards of $140,000 a year?
Well, Edgerton is a unique little town, 1,700 people, 3,900 jobs, the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Intermodal Facility in town, 11 million square foot of new industrial growth in the last 4 years. That's about $1.1 billion worth of investment in a small town of 1,700.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And you're managing all of that.
I and staff together manage all that. But I kind of look at myself more as the sales guy for a lot of that. I was, so the intermodal started really about 9 years ago, right after I became mayor. It came in front of us, and I was the guy that helped negotiate that intermodal park into Edgerton. Then we had the downturn in the economy at that time kind of stalled things out. So the vertical growth started about 4 years ago, but it was really changed drastically what I originally ran for, which is actually helping me bring my dreams to fruition. So when I first ran for mayor, still my goal is to create opportunity for my kids, grandkids, and the citizens of Edgerton. You know, doubling jobs, twice as many jobs in town as we have citizens is opportunity to start with. Hmm. And then there's a ton of opportunity for advancement in those jobs. So you take a company, almost any company we can name, but take companies like UPS, Jet.com, Amazon, you know, even Flexsteel Industries, Nemdaco. A lot of them offer college tuition reimbursement, and so that opportunity is being created all the time. So kids that are less fortunate that don't get to go to college can come to Edgerton and work and still go to college and pay their way through that.
Yeah, Mayor, how did the pay raise come about?
You know, really in 2009, when I first became mayor, after negotiation of the intermodal, we had some conversations. Council members brought it up back then about potentially upping or boosting the pay for mayor, and I denied all that. At the time, I was full-time employed with the neighboring community, and it didn't feel right to me.
Gardner, you're talking about.
Yeah. So I worked 26 years for the city of Gardner. About 3 years ago, I left the city of Gardner. Since then, towards the end of 2017, I spent a short amount of time working for an engineering firm, doing some infrastructure inspections, and that was when I realized that we had created a lot more work in my position than we had ever originally thought of.
For $1,000 a year, you weren't working 10, 15, 20 hours a week.
Oh, no. Last year, 2017, I had one week less than 40 hours. And I had many weeks over 80 hours. And, you know, it's a job load. And so early January, when I asked council to consider what this had became, they really looked at it based on hours and work that was put into the job, but also the growth and really what we have produced for the community.
And the amount of money you're being paid now, this wasn't your idea. This came from the council, if I understand.
It is. So from my perspective, that was a policy decision. So I asked council to consider what the job had became. I left the room. I allowed them to have open debate, public present, to discuss it and feel comfortable about discussing it. So they did discuss it. I came back into the room to a motion for $7,500 a month,
mm-hmm.
which is a tremendous jump from $1,000 a year to go $7,500 a month. But you know, I also tend to believe that the expertise that I bring to the table, the experience I bring to the table, is difficult to replace and sometimes somewhat impossible to replace with a staff member, because a staff member can't speak as an elected, and especially mm-hmm. the chief elected official.
You told Lynn Horsley from the Star that you were pleasantly surprised by the pay raise, the amount of the pay raise. That sound about right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you're satisfied with it now?
I am satisfied. And shortly after I got the pay raise, I resigned from the engineering firm. And
the pay raise sort of compensates you for about what you were receiving in your other job.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, and it provides the opportunity for me to continue the path that we've been on and the workload that is entailed in that. And so, you know, if council wouldn't have gave me $90,000 a year, then I had to make a decision on what type of work would go into the mayor's job. But they gave me the opportunity to continue and move town forward.
So let's talk a little more about Edgerton itself, Mayor, because I haven't mentioned this. You've alluded to it here. Edgerton is home to something called the Logistics Park Kansas City. This is encompasses the intermodal facility that you've referenced here.
Correct.
It's a 1,700-acre master-planned distribution and warehouse development. For listeners unfamiliar with it, just give us the master plan, the Logistics Park 101 here. What is it?
So there's really, this is a transportation hub. It's oceanfront property in Kansas, if you will. But
for railroads.
For freight in general.
Freight railroads, yeah.
Yeah. It's ran by Burlington Northern Santa Fe, so it's a rail facility. But it brings containers or truckloads from China or other places in the world to Edgerton to offload to go to go to distribution warehouses, which most of those are in Edgerton.
These loads are what are shipped over from China, for instance, to big ports on the West Coast, and then they're moved by rail to Edgerton.
To Edgerton, correct.
Okay.
And so there's a second part to what I think is hugely important to Kansas and the economy of farmers, is that we have two companies now in town. One of them is DeLong Grain, which is one of the largest containerized grain exporters in the nation. And we also have a new company that's called Cold Point. They are a refrigerated meat shipping company. So mm-hmm. they ship beef, pork, and chicken overseas. Mm. And so exports is definitely a part of what we do. And they're not the only two companies that export. We have Excel Industries in town. Excel Industries is a mower manufacturer. They came to Edgerton because they wanted to increase their export presence so they could be more fluid throughout the year, since growing seasons are different across the world.
So we're seeing imports and exports meeting in tiny Edgerton, Kansas.
Absolutely.
And when these containers arrive in Edgerton, these trailers, if you will, what happens then? Trucks pull up? Put them on the back, and off they go to offload all across the Midwest and the entire country.
Yeah, really, the intermodal itself will support warehouses within about 300 miles of it. So most certainly a truck could be loaded onto a semi and drove to St. Louis or Omaha or anywhere around the area to a warehouse or manufacturing facility. But in our case, what we've seen about new growth in Edgerton, the 11 million square foot I talked about, there's a term in the railroad industry or the warehousing industry or transportation. It's called drayage. That drayage is from the intermodal itself to a warehouse facility. And because we are so close to the intermodal facility, and that drayage cost means a lot. If you're looking at drayage in Edgerton, Kansas, it could be $30 or $50 per load. If you move just a little ways north of us to Olathe, that can jump to $200 a load.
So are we seeing the development of more warehousing in the Edgerton area then?
We are. You mentioned 1,700 acres of a master plan development. We actually just annexed another 575 acres at the end of last year.
Wow.
So, and that's in process right now. This week, we actually at council hear the zoning change to LP district. So Edgerton's still growing. That was about a 25% growth in acreage for Edgerton.
So just to review then, the kinds of products coming into Edgerton and the kinds of products going out are what? Just walk us through that again.
Well, there's all kinds of products that come in. So, I mean, anything that you could find at almost any store that you shop at would be coming into
the facility. Into a Target or a Costco, you're going to see all the stuff coming into Edgerton.
Absolutely. Or if you receive UPS shipments from across the country, they come into Edgerton, Kansas. Or FedEx comes into Edgerton, Kansas. One of the largest intermodal users or Burlington Northern customers is actually J.B. Hunt. And so anytime you see a J.B. Hunt truck there, it's quite possible that came from the Edgerton facility.
Why was Edgerton selected as the place to be home to all of this?
Well,
this massive development.
So the intermodal itself selected a place closest to Kansas City, so closest to the employment market they could. They had a long enough, straight enough piece of track. In candid honesty, Edgerton wasn't their first choice. They actually negotiated with the neighboring community of Gardner.
Mm-hmm.
Gardner didn't follow through on the negotiations that they originally did. And because of time constraints, the Burlington Northern Santa Fe, and at that time the Allen Group, came to us and asked us if we would consider it.
And so you were in office at the time.
I was in office.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I had been – at that time I had been in office – about 4 months.
Well, what made you think that Edgerton could handle something like this?
Well, Edgerton is a tenacious city that has stuck up for itself for many years. And, in reality, the size of the development was much larger than almost any city in Kansas could handle. The expenses associated are much larger than our neighboring city could have handled. So there's always been the need for partnerships. There was some legislation passed prior to it coming to Edgerton that opened up an intermodal revolving fund. We have actually not ever used that intermodal revolving fund, but we've used partnerships with the Kansas Department of Transportation, Johnson County,
right,
to help fund infrastructure that allowed us to allow warehouses to build up to start repaying that infrastructure.
So what's been the impact on your town then? This is a seismic shift. Do residents want to see this shift, or is there some resistance to what's going on down there?
You know, I think there's always two sides to a story. So for the most part, people were pretty excited about it. One huge advantage Edgerton residents have of this huge industrial park is that we have the Big Bull Creek Park in between us, which is a Johnson County Regional Park. It's about a 2,000-acre park that has recently started to develop, but that separates the residential community from this industrial park.
Which is a good thing,
which
I imagine.
Is a good thing. Something that no other city I've ever seen has done. And so, but the income that we see today off of the project, off of the vertical construction that we've done, has done things like in 2017, we paved 50% of our, at the time, gravel roads or chip and seal roads. We did a 2-inch overlay.
You're making a big push on infrastructure right now.
Huge.
In fact, your website has a phrase for it, which I'm looking for here in my notes, but infrastructure comes first, that kind of idea.
Absolutely. Well, our experience is if you build it, they will come. And that works both with the industrial, but it also works with the residential community. And, you know, we have more opportunity than we've ever had before in the residential area. So, you know, we start this year planning an off-grade crossing over the railroad tracks. So Edgerton has I-35, medical services come in that way, Johnson County MedAct. And we never had the ability to fund an off-grade crossing. Because of the project that we have today, that will fund not the taxpayers, not the residential population, but the actual money from this project will fund an off-grade crossing. The engineering starts for that this year. I would expect construction to start 2020, 2021, and we'll have our first off-grade crossing to serve our residential community better.
What's going to happen to the residential side? What kind of growth do you anticipate happening in Little Edgerton, Kansas?
You know, we've created a housing market need, a huge demand for housing. We haven't seen a lot of housing in town. Even our neighboring community, in my opinion, hasn't seen a lot of housing. They're not back to pre-recession numbers yet. But the market is definitely in need of a huge developer that wants to put a lot of houses on the ground.
Is that happening?
You know, not enough to offset the supply and demand issue that we have.
Why is that?
You know, I think, well, the downturn put a lot of developers out of business. And so the labor shortage that we see today, unemployment in Johnson County is you know, around 2.5%. And so the developers that we talk to often are working in the markets they've always worked in. And so they work in the Blue Valley School District, Overland Park. They work in Olathe.
They're not used to coming out to Edgerton.
No, we're fringe growth. So I equate Edgerton much more to like the Legends area, where we've done growth in the exact opposite manner that anybody else does. We're industrial first, and we've created a huge demand for housing, and housing will pick up. And, you know, there's more activity around that now, but in my case, nothing's a done deal until it's a done deal.
You know, one thing that's really surprised me is population growth. Your population has grown a little bit, but not in the sort of spectacular way that you might expect given the creation of all these jobs. And I'm going back to population numbers since the early 1990s, that surprised me, and I'm wondering, should it?
It should catch up, but again, the downturn of the economy, lack of housing stock, and until we get housing stock in places for people to live, we won't see much of a population change. So, you know, opportunities for developers today in Edgerton are really residential, single-family, multifamily, you know, commercial. I mean, we could use a truck stop. We don't have a truck stop yet. And if you really date back to the early on conversations, when we originally negotiated intermodal, we thought we would build 7.2 million square foot in 15 to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
We built 11 million square foot in 4 years. I talked to people that came to Edgerton, you know, 5 years ago, and they said, you contact us, you know, 5 or 10 years when there's something actually happening out here. Today, when I can get them to come back to the area and see what's happened, their eyes turn, and now they're looking really hard for property to purchase to do projects. But we've got to partner with that and make that happen.
Edgerton Mayor Donald Roberts is my guest. How hungry is the community at large for this residential growth to occur?
You know, I think it provides them the things they want. So we recently announced the construction of a Dollar General, which is currently under construction, provides some much-needed support for the community itself, and the fact that we won't have to leave town for all of our groceries anymore, so we don't have a grocery store in town.
Are you getting one?
Well, we don't have one on the slate yet. We're getting a Dollar General store. Today's Dollar Generals are about 50% grocery, so that covers some of the gap, but the desire is still to have more amenities, you know, restaurants, grocery stores, you know, additional gas stations, and so additional opportunity for people and you know, quality of life, really. And so as for us to get that, 1,700 people isn't going to generate enough revenue for a grocery store, so we need to grow the rooftops to attract a quality grocery store.
So the population of Edgerton today is what?
Well, we're really about 1,758.
1,758?
Correct.
But what do you think it's going to be in 5 years?
You know, my crystal ball is pretty fuzzy, but I think there's a huge possibility if you take the growth potential that I'm seeing today, that we could grow by 2,000 people a year potentially. So that would give us about 20,000 people.
So you want your town's going to grow, it's going to double every year.
Most certainly could.
For a number of years to come, that's a dramatic shift in what life in Edgerton, Kansas has been all about.
It is a huge shift.
Are you okay with it? Do you want to see it happen?
The little town you grew up in or moved out to? I grew up in Edgerton, but, I'm excited about the opportunities that it provides. And I really think from a community standpoint is, as long as we're a community that stays welcoming and we want to meet our neighbors and we want to treat people as our neighbors, and as long as we have good people move our way, then Edgerton's a town that will take that and foster that into great relationships, and we'll just build a community, and we'll all be neighbors. And I think I see that today. People move in, people move out, but for various reasons. But most generally, people that stay around really come along to the Edgerton way. And I think that's what makes a community strong.
The Edgerton way, how do you maintain that when you're doubling every year? I mean, that's phenomenal growth, difficult to manage. It means lots of big changes in town, like maybe even more crime, Mayor.
Well, they're on percentage base, maybe. I think growth can bring bad things or growth can bring great things. And so I think if you tie all that together, you're really looking at, government isn't community. Community is the people that live in the community. And as long as the citizens are together and are open-minded and opened hearts, then they can attract people that will be likewise. And the people that don't fit in won't want to be around.
Do you have the resources to manage things like the growth in your police department, what you're going to need, a fire department? I mean, how does all that play out?
So emergency services, we do contract services with Johnson County Sheriff's Department. So, that's a department of about 800 officers, well-trained, professional group.
Is that going to have to change with a community getting as big as Edgerton is?
By state law, we don't have to change until we're a Class 1 city. So, I mean, we have a long ways to go before we have to change.
How big is a Class 1 city?
About 50,000 people.
Okay.
So we have a long ways to go before we're forced into a change. Will we consider change? We would consider change if the opportunity was right to have our own department. But, from past experience, the reason we went away from our own department is, Edgerton is that sleepy little town and there's not much happening. And so we were the training grounds for officers that left. The Johnson County Sheriff's Department was really helped us not be that training ground anymore. Then we also have a fire district number 1, which covers about 96 square miles. Including Edgerton, great partnership with the fire district, and I would think that would last forever. They're their own taxing entity, and they do a phenomenal job. They just actually took the ISO rating in our area from a 4 to a 2, so that provides cost savings to every residence in the community.
What about your downtown? If I remember correctly, it's pretty small. And any city sort of needs a soul, and downtowns oftentimes are that soul. What's going to happen to your downtown?
Well, we're actually doing a downtown planning process right now. The goal for us, because you are correct, our downtown is small. The goal for us is to be able to grow that downtown and maintain some of what Edgerton really is in that downtown as we do so. Council actually hears that Thursday or makes a determination on that downtown study. And then we'll roll out a project that does some streetscape and all that to help beautify that area and help attract more people to the area.
Again, Edgerton Mayor Donald Roberts is my guest. As you grow this quickly, are you getting help from outside experts who can guide you along the way here a little bit? I mean, this is new to you, new to your council. What kind of help are you getting?
I've got to give a lot of credit to staff. In my time, I've seen staff in Edgerton double. So we were at 9 employees when I first started. We're at 18 employees today. We've got a great staff that does a lot. We have some great consultants, that also help. And I think from a purely political perspective, I think keeping the vision from the people that know best about Edgerton, the citizens, also helps us keep things on track. And so in our case, we do a citywide citizen survey every other year to help council set the goals and objectives moving forward. This year is our citizen survey again, and we'll adjust our goals and our focus accordingly.
Wow. How long do you see yourself remaining as mayor?
I don't make any promises. This is my third term. I just got reelected.
Four-year terms?
Four-year terms. You know, and I haven't decided to run ever until slightly before election time. About 6 months out, I'll decide again. You know, but I think it's exciting to be part of. And so, you know, as long as the excitement and the thrill is there, then I would like to continue. And, you know, as long as I feel like we're doing good and the people feel like I'm doing good, then I'd like to continue.
Is your successor going to receive the same amount of pay as you do? Is that pay rate set permanently?
The pay rate set in ordinance, and it's a policy that when I received the pay raise, I told council that if they ever wanted to reconsider that, then it was up to them. All they would have to do is mention that, and we would put it back on the table. They could do what they wanted to with it.
Okay. Well, good luck. You're a busy guy. You got a lot in your plate, Mayor.
There is a lot, yeah. But it really truly is exciting, you know. And I another radio program recently was comparing me to Mayor Sly James, and I find it a little interesting. He does make a little more than me. Congratulations, Sly. But he also, as a mayor staff, has 11 people that work for him. Mm-hmm. I've got 18 that run streets, water, wastewater,
the whole kit and caboodle,
planning, zoning, and everything. So Edgerton's a unique town. We've done a lot, and it's been exciting.
Well, Mayor James wears a bow tie. You don't have one on right now.
I do not, and sometimes I do never a bow tie, but sometimes I do wear a tie. I prefer not to.
You're in Edgerton. You don't wear ties out there, do you?
No, I actually prefer jeans too.
That's Mayor Donald Roberts from Edgerton, Kansas, seeing a huge boom in people, in business, jobs, all kinds of things. Mayor, thanks for the update. We sure appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Come on out and see us sometime.
I want to come out and see you. Sounds great. Time for a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about expungement and how to get crimes off your record. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday, we learned how and why America reacts to problematic public art and what makes certain monuments so controversial. You can find that discussion and others at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, we talk about the unique obstacles facing young women with serious health issues and how a patient's identity can influence the care she receives. And we'll spend a little time with band members from the Hot Sardines. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, cities and states in recent years have taken steps to ban the box. That's eliminating the question that can ask job applicants to reveal if they have a criminal history. For those arrested or convicted of a crime, having to check that box and having their history revealed has been a major stumbling block to getting their lives on track. Having their criminal past exposed often excludes them from better paying jobs or suitable housing and often finds them reoffending. There is, of course, there is recourse for some, and it's called expungement. Both Kansas and Missouri have processes in place to have records of certain convictions sealed so they don't show up on a criminal background check. Here to help explain the process on each side of the state line are Meredith Schnug. She's a clinical associate professor in the University of Kansas School of Law. Meredith, welcome. Nice to have you.
Good morning.
Matthew O'Connor is a criminal defense attorney and founder of Strategic Litigation Group in Kansas City. Matt, nice to have you. Welcome.
Nice to have you. Be here. Sorry I'm not here on the day that the Hot Sardines are going to be here.
Not bad, eh?
Yeah, I wish.
Come back tomorrow.
Okay, great.
Yeah. For our listeners, we need to be clear that what we're offering today is general information, not legal advice. For that, you need to contact an attorney. Before we get to the particulars of expungement, Meredith, let's look at the collateral consequences, if you will, of having a conviction. Things that you say have a longer lasting impact than the original sentence. What are some of those collateral consequences here?
Sure. Well, most of us are familiar with a person being sentenced when they're convicted of mm-hmm. a crime and serving a jail sentence or paying a fine, serving probation time or being on parole. But once that sentence is over, people still face long-lasting consequences from having a criminal conviction.
They can't get a job.
That's right. So access to safe and stable housing can be a problem. Better employment, even accessing some public benefits, they can be restricted based on certain criminal convictions. People entering certain educational programs or even accessing student loans. All of these can be collateral consequences to that conviction so that people are really serving more than the sentence that they are just issued by the judge.
Well, if that's the case, Matt, why don't we just ban the box then that tells employers that someone may have a criminal history? Just get rid of it. get rid of the problem.
Well, I think, you know, if you're in the insurance industry, which is one of the things that's accepted in the new Missouri statute or maybe a bank or something like that, yeah. I think there's some level that employers do have a right to know that kind of information. But you're right. There is a lot of collateral damage, in my opinion. I'll give you an example. A woman who applied for a job, had she not had the prior conviction, she could have qualified for a job that made $72,000. But because of that, she's working in a job that makes $40,000 a year mm-hmm. because of something that happened when she was 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the ridiculousness of that. I think Kansas, I think you mentioned before, 1971, they've had a pretty clear expungement law. Missouri just passed one that came into effect January 1st. And the list of exceptions is quite long. I mean, things like forgery and you know, different things like that. Of course, sex crimes are accepted, and that's understandable. Mm-hmm. They also accepted boating while intoxicated. I guess that's a big problem in Missouri.
So, Meredith, this notion that maybe we should have a more compassionate view of folks who have already served their sentences and who have paid their debt to society, that's an idea you subscribe to?
Well, of course, but I don't also think that it's just about being compassionate. There's a lot of common sense that's involved with that, too. When people are released from their sentence, they are best contributing to our communities if they're able to achieve their full potential. So if they can access that higher paying job, if they can keep their families from having to move from one low-income housing neighborhood to the next and access better housing. So there are consequences not only for the person who's experienced the conviction, but we also have to think more broadly of how that conviction can impact a whole family. So if somebody is prevented from accessing a better paying job, that also has implications for the people living in that household, particularly the children. And so convictions can also be a part of that generational cycle of poverty. So any steps that we can take to help eliminate those barriers for folks to truly achieve their full potential is something that's not just about being compassionate, but something that makes sense for our communities.
So, Matt O'Connor, we're seeing changing attitudes in our legislatures, but you're suggesting maybe those attitudes aren't changing fast enough.
I think we're starting to. I think Missouri's been a little slow on the draw, but this is a good start. And for the reasons that she just said, they're perfect examples of, you know, someone who's turned their life around. It's not an easy process to go through. It's like there's two things you don't want to see made, sausage and law. And by the time they have sort of paid their debt, they're still paying their debt by not being able to obtain that full employment that they can. And it does. It creates a cycle. I've seen it time after time. And Missouri is starting to get there. I think we have a long way to go.
We're talking about expungement of criminal records. You know, saying a conviction has been expunged, Meredith, means what in Kansas?
So it means that the record is sealed from public view for the most part. There are still certain employers who will be able to access that record, and then the courts always have access to the record.
Can someone go online and see that someone has been convicted and spent time? if a record's been expunged?
In the most circumstances, no. But what's a little bit tricky about expungement in the digital age is that the expungement order will seal the court record. But if there was, for example, a news article that was written about that crime, the news article still exists in the digital world. Mm-hmm. So expungement can solve some problems. It won't entirely erase what had happened. However, in a scenario like that, if you do have an expungement, you also have a court order where a judge is looking to say, yes, you have qualified for expungement. Your behavior and circumstances warrant this sealing of the record. So in some sense, that's a way to potentially address to somebody who might be seeing that news article that, you know, you've turned your life around and the court has also acknowledged that.
Matt, in Missouri, does expungement mean a clean slate?
The exception swallows the rule, so to speak. I'll give you an example. They can vote. They can testify under oath that they haven't been convicted of a crime. However, if they're applying for a job at a bank or insurance, there's a list of exceptions to it. And the other interesting kind of problem is that no matter what the states do, Missouri has what's called a suspended imposition of sentence. It's a legal fiction where you plead guilty, but you're not convicted. Mm-hmm. Well, the feds don't recognize that. So the states can't tell the federal government what they are going to have in their data bank. So it remains to be seen whether they remove this from the NICS, which is basically the arrest records, which are national. And then there's the private companies that keep a data bank, kind of what you're talking about. How does a court order a private company to remove that from their data bank? So that it is a clean slate to an extent, but there needs to be some further delineation so it's more effective. But it, you know, it's in Missouri, it's pretty brand new, January 1st, 2018. And what we're finding is that, you know, the clerk's office is getting used to it, the judges are getting used to it, and really the prosecutors are getting used to it. So there's a once we wear the shine off of it, I think it'll be more effective.
So you're hoping that the changes in the law make this process of expungement easier rather than harder then?
Correct. And actually, if it is the form that they have, if your listeners Google Missouri expungement, the Missouri Supreme Court rules have a very short form. It's one of the very straightforward. They can actually fill it out themselves. Mm-hmm. They put their date of arrest, that they haven't had any issues, if it's 7 years for a felony and 3 years for a misdemeanor. And the big thing about that is it used to be 20 and 10 and a lot higher burden. And if they meet the criteria, it's in the public interest and the general public welfare, then the judge shall order it. And so your listeners understand, shall and may. Shall is you do it, no questions about it, no discretion. And may is there is discretion.
Right.
So the prosecutor would then have the burden to show that it's not in the public interest. So that is a good thing. That shift in the mandatory language signals that I think Missouri is moving in the right direction.
Again, we're talking about the process of expunging criminal records. Let's work through some of the particulars here, Meredith. We're learning here that not every crime is eligible for expungement, but there are types of felonies and misdemeanors that qualify. Can you give us some examples of what can be expunged in Kansas?
Sure. For the most part, lower-level felonies, more severe felonies, and misdemeanors can be expunged. There's a list of certain offenses that cannot. And that list includes murder, manslaughter, rape, and other serious sexual offenses. Also, child endangering is on that list. But for the most part, most of those other lower-level felonies and misdemeanors can be expunged.
And Matt, what about Missouri? Is it a similar kind of list?
Yeah. The person crimes, Class A felonies, dangerous felonies, any offense where they register as a sex offender. And interestingly, DUIs are not expungible.
Huh.
Forgery is not expungible. Don't know why. A lot of the stealing offenses aren't. Drug cases are, like simple possession and some distribution cases under Section 195. But the list of what is not expungible is quite long.
So, Matt, in Missouri, then, how soon after completing a sentence can someone request that their record be expunged?
If it's a misdemeanor and they have been sort of crime-free, no arrests, they have to wait 3 years, and then they can file it. If it's a felony, 7 years. Hmm. And let's say that they file for an expungement and they're denied the expungement, they have to wait 1 year to try to get it again.
How about on the Kansas side, Meredith?
So the lower level felonies and misdemeanors are a 3-year wait period. More severe felonies are a 5-year wait period, and a second DUI conviction is a 10-year wait period.
Okay. Besides the requisite waiting period, what are some of the other requirements that have to be met on the Missouri side, Matt?
Well, it's just that they've completed all of their obligations. So, in other words, if there's a restitution, they paid the restitution. If there were court costs, they've paid the court costs. And that since the date that they've completed all of those requirements, there have been no arrests or contact with law enforcement or other situation. And then they can petition for the court to expunge their record.
Similar in Kansas?
In Kansas, after that wait period, a person may petition. If they don't have a felony conviction within the past 2 years, they can't have any current criminal cases pending against them. And then the third and fourth factors allow the judge a little bit more discretion. The court must find that the behavior and circumstances of the petitioner warrant the expungement and that the expungement is consistent with the public welfare.
Can there be exceptions made for, say, mental illness, that kind of thing?
Sure. I mean, that would be all of the circumstances that the court would be considering in, evaluating those discretionary factors. When we're advocating for our clients, we're pointing out to the court the progress that they've made since their conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps they've completed substance abuse treatment and are now sober, those kinds of things.
You know, is there a way, you know, that you have these services that the KU Legal Aid Clinic offers, Meredith? Is there a way to get some information about this that's sort of in layman's terms that people can understand easily?
About expungement?
Yeah.
Yes. The Kansas Legal Services website, which is our statewide legal aid provider, has a great page with a fact sheet and information about people, about where people can access those forms. The Kansas Judicial Council also publishes on their website all of the forms that somebody would need to fill out themselves to petition for expungement.
Yeah. Matt, I'm wondering what the limit on the number of offenses I can request to be expunged is. Is there a limit?
One felony and two misdemeanors.
Same thing in Kansas?
No, there is no limit. As long as you qualify, you can petition to expunge all of your record.
And Matt just mentioned, Meredith, that the paperwork in Missouri is a little bit more limited based on the new law. How about in Kansas?
The paperwork is really well developed. It's available to the public. I will say that it's common for us to meet with clients who have attempted to do it themselves and need some additional guidance. So we encourage people to consult with an attorney. There are legal aid providers that provide this service to folks who may not be able to afford an attorney.
I was going to say maybe this is a bad question for folks who are attorneys, Matt, but can you do this without an attorney?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't have to hire an attorney.
I don't think you necessarily have to. I think it makes it a little bit easier, especially since it's a new statute. But that's why I wanted people to understand. You can go online and just literally Google the phrase Missouri expungement. There's two chapters. One's for an arrest and one's for convictions. And the one for convictions, if you find it, there's a little link that will go right to it. It's on the court's page. It's basically a page and a half. You fill it out. You pay the $250 filing fee, which, by the way, is higher than most filing fees. So there's a little income coming to the Missouri. I think they knew that.
Yeah.
And then you get a court date.
And you get a court date, and you have to show up in court and make your case then.
Exactly.
And you can do it without a lawyer.
Yep. And the elements are right on the form that the court provides. So I think it is something that people should be able to do for themselves.
Can you do it without a lawyer in Kansas, Meredith?
You can.
Yeah. There's a way to do it, and would you recommend it?
I think the trickiest part a lot of times is figuring out what you are actually convicted for, the severity level of your offense, and then how long you have to wait before you're eligible. That's probably where some legal advice may be most helpful.
Yeah.
And then if somebody has, subsequent convictions or is questioning whether a judge would challenge their petition, then, of course, consulting an attorney is going to be helpful.
Okay. We'll have to leave our conversation there. That was the voice of Meredith Schnug, a clinical associate professor at the University of Kansas School of Law. Meredith, thanks so much. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Matthew J. O'Connor is a criminal defense attorney and founder of Strategic Litigation Group in Kansas City, Missouri. Matt, good to see you again.
Thank you very much.
You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Follow me at Steve Prasky. And don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. Tomorrow, we'll talk with the latest band coming to the Folly Jazz Series and probably the only one with a tap dancer in the ensemble. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Claire Verbeck. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.